room, you can't move, you can't speak. It's a horrible, horrible feeling.
You know, you're looking out into the darkness and then you see a figure, but it's darker than the darkness.
I just get this like really creepy feeling, and I see this this like shadowy demon looking figure in the front seat of the car.
She used to come into my room at night and stand right by my bed, and I just was petrified.
I remember I saw something fly by my bedroom window. We heard the bathroom door shut. So then we looked out my bedroom window down the hallway, and the bathroom door was wide open.
So we came around the bend and we saw Eyeshine. This thing stood up. I mean, it stood up. And it had high pointed ears, it had a snout, had a long arm, and it grabbed the deer.
Okay, guys, I am super excited to welcome our next guest to Let's Get Freaky. Tonight, we are joined by Derek Olson. How are you, sir?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. Thank you for the invite. Really excited to be on your show and really excited about some of the topics we're going to get into that I think listeners will find pretty interesting.
Yes, sir. This is a big moment for me. Meeting people like you is what is so cool about doing podcasts, you know? I'm a big fan of your work. I'm sure most people listening to Let's Get Freaky know who you are, but for those that don't, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you into these subjects?
Yeah. You know, as a kid, I was always interested in ancient history and always fascinated by the pyramids and just anything ancient structures. And so that was kind of, I guess, where it all started. I was just always had a natural bent towards history. And then I remember back around 2012, what really got me down this rabbit hole was I was doing an internet search one day of like, you know, ancient structures. And what pops up but a megalithic wall in Peru? I think it was at Sacsayhuaman, if my memory serves me right. And I was dumbstruck, like, what is that? And I click on the image, and I start reading about it. And, you know, the mainstream narrative was what I was reading back then. You know, this is Inca construction. But still, I'm going, how have I never seen this before? This is more superior than most other, you know, ancient architecture I've seen. And so I started to do some research and found, you know, the alternative theories that this is actually megalithic. This is way older. It predates the Inca. This is from the pre-Diluvian world, the Golden Age, right? So that took me really down this path of researching ancient history. And it was like the more I researched, the more I realized it looks like there's a cover-up. It looks like there's a cover-up of real history. And why is this? And so several years later, I end up going to Peru to see these walls with a researcher named Brian Forster. Some people might know who that is. And so going with a guide like that, man, he's getting you up close to all of the best phenomena of ancient technology in Peru. But it wasn't just the walls. In Peru is where I saw up close these elongated skulls. In Peru, they're all over really, but mostly in that Paracas region. When I saw those with my own eyes, I knew without a shadow of a doubt, there's no way that is 100% human. There's no way that's just a cradle headboarded human, especially when you're with someone like Brian, who's he's not a geologist, but he's been in the medical field. And he can, you know, share with you just quick facts like cradle headboarding can change the shape of a skull, but it can't add more cranial mass. You know, you start hearing stuff like that and you're kind of going, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Anyway, all that to say, when I got back from that trip, I had all these photos, all this video content, and, you know, all this new knowledge where I feel like I've got to do something with it. And I realized, you know, there's really not a lot of blogs out there or channels at, this was, you know, 2017, dedicated to this stuff. So that's when I thought, you know what, I'm going to launch Megalithic Marvels. That was my original name. I've since changed it, and I can tell you about that if you want, but since changed it to Stargate Voyager. So yeah, that was kind of what got me on this journey, man. And it's been a wild ride ever since.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen pictures of the elongated skulls, and oh man, to actually see them in person must be incredible.
Oh yeah. I mean, simply incredible the way these things are created. I believe there's some sort of hybrid. This is some sort of hybrid human. Some would say this is a hybrid, meaning it's also part Nephilim or something non-human. So yeah, when you look into the history of these skulls, it's pretty crazy. They were first started to be discovered in the early 1900s in Peru by an archaeologist there. And it's something about this Paracas region by the coast is where the largest collection of these huge skulls are. And anybody can Google Paracas skulls and you're going to see what we're talking about here. But these things don't just have longer heads. On average, I think they have about 25% more cranial volume. There's some that have 50% more, and those are just bizarro to see. But they've also got bigger eye sockets. They're missing the sagittal sutures. And one of the smoking gun for me is the naturally elongated skulls, and I'll come back to that in a minute. They their foramen magnum is at a different spot. The foramen magnum is the hole in the center bottom of our skulls where the neck attaches. So on us, it's right in the middle center of our bottom of our skulls. On these naturally elongated skulls, it's at the very back. And so there's no way a cradle headboarding can do that. That's 100% pure genetic. So you have all these anatomical, crazy genetic anomalies happening with these skulls. And I mentioned natural elongated skulls. The reason it gets confusing to some people is there are a bunch of cradle headboarded skulls all over Peru too. And that was what I would call the humans trying to emulate the elite ruling class of their day, who were the hybrids. So the normal people are trying to look like the hybrids. And so they were cradle boarding their children and they were squishing and shaping the skulls. But other than that, they were pretty small-like and they had normal eye sockets and everything else like we would, except for the skull shape. But again, you compare that side by side with the natural ones and you can clearly see these are two different things.
Yeah, so interesting, man. Why do you think there's a pushback from the mainstream on some of these subjects? Because we've got so much evidence that the history that we're told may not be as it adds up. Why do you think there's a pushback?
Yeah, great question. You know, it's kind of like, well, for example, I could share with you all kinds of newspaper articles that were published, you know, before political correctness took over, that document elongated skulls discovered in America, on Catalina Island in California, here in Washington State where I live. What was he called? One of the great, in the 90s, there was a skeleton discovered. I'm blanking on his name right now. And it was just passed away. This is a really old Native American skeleton. But when you look into the actual original photographs, this thing had an elongated skull. The point is, anything like that discovered here is swept under the rug. And the story is retold that this was just a very old Native American skull. That's why I love Peru. I call it's like the Wild West of archaeology, where you can still see this stuff on display. And if you get special permissions, you can even hold them. So I think it's swept under the rug because they don't want us asking questions about our distant past.
Yeah.
Right? If these are all on display, especially in America, people are going to ask the questions I have, like, well, why do these have all these genetic anomalies that can't be explained away with cradle headboarding? So if they are hybrids, how did they get here? Where did they come from? And to me, from my worldview, this points back to the golden age, that the Bible, the Book of Enoch, and really every civilization on earth talks of this golden age where the gods mingled with men. And the ancients held that the gods even built the megaliths using technologies, and they referred to them as Cyclopean architecture. And so, again, I think that's why it's swept under the rug, is because if you see it, you're going to think about it. If you think about it, you're going to ask questions. If you ask questions, you're going to research. And again, a lot of it points to the technology. Where did they get the technology? If they had it, where did it go? To me, one of the answers I have is, well, it points that there was a worldwide global cataclysm, right? And so we lost a lot of that knowledge. I think we've discovered a lot of it since, but again, the elite of the day have it and don't want to share it. And again, that's why they don't want us asking questions. So I know I said a lot there, but.
That's awesome, man. Do you get, because I know you've got a huge following, do you get a lot of pushback from mainstream science and stuff like that? Do you get a lot of?
You know, yeah, I have in ways. And, you know, my approach to this isn't to be the dogmatic voice that's saying this is exactly what happened and I'm going to prove it to you. I just ask a lot of questions. That's all I've ever done, is just ask a lot of questions. If you see my videos or see my posts, I'm really just sharing, you know, footage and asking questions. And now a lot of people love that, which is why I believe my channels have really grown, because people are searching for truth, especially in this post-COVID world. But it's crazy how triggered just asking questions triggers people. And so, yeah, I've just learned to grow some tough skin, you know, as far as comments go, because every post you're triggering some people that are just losing their mind that I'm not towing the mainstream narrative on stuff.
Yeah.
But then in a more sinister way, I referenced how I had to change my name. And originally my name was Megalithic Marvels. Well, it started with Instagram. I realized, man, why is my account, you know, because you can see all your analytics. So I've had just massive growth year after year since I started. And then suddenly it flatlined, and then it was just going straight down. And so I'm like, why is my account shrinking? What's going on? And then I started getting messages from people saying, hey, I never see your stuff show up anymore. I heard you on so-and-so podcast. I searched for it and I can't find you. And so, you know, that's when I realized, okay, there was something to the shadow banning going on, where I think everything's fine, but nobody can really see anything and find me. Well, then I tested it out. And, you know, from other accounts, I would search my account, and sure enough, couldn't, if you put in Megalithic Marvels, at least last time I checked, you couldn't find my account or any, you know, videos related to that hashtag. Completely gone.
Wow.
So like a total blackout. Well, then I started getting messages from people saying, look at this. When you even typed in the word Megalithic Marvels, and I took a screenshot of this probably 2 months ago, this big warning came up that said, this is related to human trafficking. And it's like, how is megalithic history and rocks related to human trafficking?
Yeah.
So that's kind of when I go, am I really married to the name? Yeah. And I thought, not really, you know. So I'm going to play the game, and I changed it. So now it's Stargate Voyager. And the reason I chose that name is because in everywhere I go, Egypt, Peru, Stargates come up, right? The ancients, there was something about Stargates and portals. And so, and plus I feel like it gives me a little bit broader reach on things, where I can not just talk about rocks, but all kinds of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of the pushback I have, experienced. And then on Facebook, I've been totally demonetized. I had a huge page, like 375,000 followers, I think.
Wow.
I used to get tens of thousands of, you know, likes and shares on a decent good post.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to break 100 likes now.
Wow,
right?
Man.
So it's like they just hit a button and totally shut it off.
Yeah. I find that terrifying. I really do, because shadow banning does seem to be something that is happening more and more. And it's scary that they can do that. You've got all this work and all this amazing work, and so many people are interested in it. And it's clearly there's a lot to it. And yet, for whatever reason, they don't want this stuff out there. And they, yeah, as you say, the click of a button, and it's, man, it's terrifying. I find that scary, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, especially if you were, you know, luckily I've got other ways of making income. But it would be totally really horrifying if this was 100% my sole income, because yeah, there was a while I was making some pretty good money on Facebook, just from all the ads and the videos. And again, so you went from, you know, I think 1 month I made like almost $5,000, and then, you know, it's just gone, taken away. Bye-bye.
Wow.
Because you've broken rules, and but they don't really tell you what you did.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
there's no way to get a hold of anybody to help you. It's the craziest situation.
Yeah, there's no number to ring where you're actually talking to someone. You know, it's like,
Yeah.
it's, man, wow. And they don't give you, as you say, they don't give you a logical explanation. It's just you've broken a rule that's, you don't even know what it is.
Yep, they just say, it usually says something like you broke community guidelines. And so you try to dig into that, and I don't want to bore people with it, but it's just like, yeah, you were posting unoriginal content. It's like, this is all my own content, right?
Yeah.
So there's no way to really argue with it. There's no way to appeal it. Again, I've tried everything. So you just march on, you move on. And so now my focus is definitely on YouTube most. I'm still doing some stuff on Instagram. But again, because of that censorship, I'm trying to focus more on YouTube. So that's where people can probably follow me and find me the most. And X,
Yeah.
formerly
X
Twitter.
is great.
Yeah.
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 You can say anything on X.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh man. So going back to the elongated skulls, I'm curious to ask you, have any of these skulls been found in the US? Or is it just Peru?
Yeah, great question. So, yes, there's a researcher named L.A. Marzulli who kind of broke the story on elongated skull discovered on Catalina Island. And it might have been more than just one, but he featured several or a photo of one he found. And so back in like the early 1900s, there was a German a naturalist who first reported unearthing an 8-foot-tall skeleton with artifacts on Catalina Island. And you can even find newspaper articles about this from 1913 that feature
Wow.
this story of this guy holding a skull, and the subtitle reads, "The Wonderful Discovery of Naturalist Ferdinand of Denver on Catalina Island, an 8-foot giant buried with his life treasures." So again, back before political correctness, up to the early 1900s, you were finding front page news articles like this, even from publications like the New York Times. So to answer your question, yeah, Catalina Island is one of the more famous accounts where there was an elongated skull, but not just elongated, there was supposed giant skeletons, again, 8 foot. So there was this report in 1913. Then there was an amateur archaeologist that came after that. His name was Ralph Glidden, I believe. And he began to do excavations on Catalina Island. And this was, again, kind of early 1900s up to 1930. And this guy unearthed hundreds of skeletons. Actually, I believe he found more than 3,000. And almost all the male skeletons he unearthed averaged 7 feet in height. And
Wow.
there was one that measured 9 foot 2 inches. And again, I've lived in California. I've seen Catalina Island, and it's kind of like Sardinia, which is a small island south of Italy. It's like, you know, it's like in the Golden Age, or the post-flood giants, they were, it's like they were trying to escape. and they were looking for defensive strategic locations like Catalina Island, Sardinia, which is full of giant lore and all these ancient giant structures and tombs. And so it's kind of like they went to Catalina Island. Another topic we can get into is Lovelock Cave in Nevada. Thousands of years ago, that was covered by this huge lake. And so the legendary cave where these supposed giants were would have been an island too. So anyway, to say all that, this Ralph Glidden guy excavated all of these skeletons. And again, that kind of just all disappeared in history. Catalina Island now has this huge, beautiful museum. Well, L.M. Marzulli went there and was just digging around in their archives. He got special permission. And what does he find? But he goes to the Ralph Glidden files, and there is Glidden standing in the dirt with a shovel next to a giant skeleton that, you know, he did all the calculations on it. Looks like, I think it measured out to at least 8 feet, and it's got this big old head. And but then he found other photos of a mother skeleton with a child, and the mother had quite an elongated skull. Wow. So again, that's one example. Another one I mentioned earlier was right here in Washington State, that it was called Kennewick Man. And that was a big discovery. I remember as a kid in the 90s, Kennewick Man. Well, according to research others have done, I'm just pulling this from them. If you go and look at the original photographs that were taken of Kennewick Man in the 90s, he has a big old elongated skull. Again, those photos were quickly just kind of disappeared. And anything you see now of Kennewick Man doesn't show the skull. It's just, you know, where he was found and maybe an arm. But 2 summers ago, I was in Kennewick, Washington, where this discovery was made. I went to the museum. And you would think this should be a prime showcase for something of this significance. You go into this museum and there's just a little display. And they've got a fake, you know, remade head about that big of Kennewick Man. And it just says this was a really old Native American skeleton. And that's it.
Wow.
Sadly, when you look into the Kennewick Man story, even the original archaeologists that unearthed this said this is not Native American. This has got Caucasian features, European. And so there was this huge decades-long fight between the scientific community and the Native Americans who were saying, you know, this is ours. Well, the Native Americans won in court and got to rebury it. So we never, you know, nobody can ever really see this thing again. So those are two examples for you of elongated skulls, apparently elongated skulls discovered here in the U.S.
Interesting, man. Do you think this type of humanoid... we're all over the world. Do you think this is how we were thousands of years ago?
You know, great question. You know, I look at stuff from kind of a biblical worldview, and I believe that there's two separate things going on. I do believe in intelligent design. I feel like it's just too hard to ignore. And so I think, you know, you have these created humans. But if you read the Book of Enoch, if you read Genesis 6, there was an attempt made by the dark forces to thwart the original bloodlines and create hybrids that would breed out the original bloodlines, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so according to the Bible, you know, you've got God creating humans in his own image, and then Lucifer or Satan, he was once, according to the Bible, an angel in heaven. Well, there was a war in heaven. Satan's kicked out. A third of the angels come with him to earth. And what do? They take on some kind of form to where they can breed. And that's what they begin to do. It says Genesis 6, it says the sons of God, that means fallen angels, bred with earth women and created these giants of old. Again, Genesis 6:4 is probably the most famous Bible scripture that would speak of this. And so what they were doing was they were creating, if you read, for example, about Goliath in the Bible, this isn't just some big, tall, dumb guy. This is kind of like an orc in Lord of the Rings, super, super strength, super speed. And again, if you read the Book of Enoch, if you read even non-biblical sources like Josephus, the historian, around the first century AD, he talks about the giants that were still in museums on display in his day. I mean, Homer, he talks about giants. Really, Greek mythology, all of the Titans were giants. It's pretty crazy to consider when you really look into Atlantis. It's giants. When you, and we can get into the legends in Peru. I was just there in October. And so I was really diving deep, asking our guides, who are native Quechuans and descendants of the Inca, what are the oral traditions and legends of Peru? And it's crazy what they start telling you off the record.
Wow.
The Inca oral traditions, and even when you are a lot about giants, and the giants had something to do with building the biggest walls. Well, then, even when you look into the Spanish chronicles, you know, because the Spanish came through and wiped out the Inca, unfortunately, in a, you know, bloody saga. But the Spanish chroniclers, the what they wrote talks about, even the Spanish chroniclers found giants when they were sweeping through Cusco and Peru, and they would find these gigantic mummified humanoids or elongated skull skeletons in caves that the Inca were worshiping. And so, you know, the Spanish were trying to rid the whole region of this idolatry, as they called it. And so they would just destroy all of this. But yeah, the Inca, and I'll come back to this on a side note, remind me, they basically worshiped these elongated skulled hybrids. So I know I said a lot there. I think that's what we're looking at. I think these elongated skulled hybrids, like, for example, in Peru and Paracas, are probably descendants of, again, what the Bible calls the Nephilim. Others would call them Anunnaki from a, you know, a non-biblical worldview. All that to say, these were some kind of hybrid. So it's crazy, yeah, in Peru, when you start looking into this, all over Peru, like, you know, most people just think of the big famous sites like Sacsayhuaman or Machu Picchu, which are incredible. And the foundations of all these sites are megalithic, precision, mortarless blocks. And then I believe the Inca came along thousands of years later and built on top of them. So literally, if you go to Machu Picchu, 90% of what you see is Inca construction. It's small, rough stone. It's got clay mortar. It's amazing engineering for what they had. But when you look at the foundations that that stuff's built on, it doesn't even compare. It almost, at wow. Machu Picchu especially, is sci-fi looking, almost space age looking at Machu Picchu. Something crazy special was going on there. But then when you get off the beaten path, which is my favorite thing to do on our tours, like I love going in the highlands above Cusco and just hiking, you find megalithic shaping all over the mountains. And you'll come across these spots, and I feature a lot of these on my YouTube channel and Instagram. And I usually try to outline the shaping in red so people can kind of really see it. They're called huacas by the Inca. And this, a huaca means sacred space or altar. So again, I believe the Inca came along and found these, and they said, man, let's make an altar out of this place. And what the Inca did was the elongated skulled humanoids I was telling you about in Paracas. So those guys predated the Inca. In fact, the Inca, when we say Inca, that doesn't mean the whole civilization. That just meant the ruling class of the Inca's day. The Inca descended from the Paracas. They all had this dark red hair. So I think the Paracas died out about 2,000 years ago. Well, they just turned into the Inca and went up to Cusco. And so what the Inca were doing is, And this was the most fascinating thing I really started to wrap my mind around on our last tour. You know, on the holy days, the solstice days, I think it's June 21st, all these huacas around Peru, these megalithic cutout altar-looking places, the Inca would bring out their most treasured possession, which were the mummies of the full-bodied mummies of these elongated skulled humanoids. And they would place them in the huacas. And on the solstice, June 21st, I believe it is, it's like these elongated skulls would be animated, not skulls, these mummies, and they would begin to speak telepathically to the Inca.
Wow.
And this is in the Inca legends, oral traditions. This is what they did. And these elongated skulled mummies would give them orders, would tell them what to do, teach them about, you know, blood sacrifice and all kinds of crazy stuff. And if you look at a lot of the skulls of these, the elongated skulled mummies, like the one called Waiki in this museum, it's got this huge hole in its head. Well, the reason it's got a hole in its head is because when these hybrids were alive, not when they were dead, when they were alive, it's called trepanation. They would cut a hole in their head and place a golden artifact. And somehow they had a technology to keep them alive for a while to do this. But they thought this is how this entity would better communicate with the gods. And so a lot of these, even in the time of the Inca, had a golden artifact in the top of the head. And isn't that crazy to consider?
Yeah, man. It's amazing.
Yeah, and if that's not crazy enough, I don't know if you've heard the story I share. There's a site called Napa Huaca. It's way off the beaten path. It's in the Sacred Valley near Machu Picchu. Most people don't know about it. I guess it's because of my videos and Brian Forster's videos and stuff, a lot of people know about it now and go there. But back when I saw it in 2017, it was still pretty unknown. But I remember Brian said, hey, I'm going to show you guys something way off the beaten path. And so he goes, I'm taking you to a cave. And so we drive to this desolate area in this mountain valley. There's an old railroad track. We start walking on the tracks. And then he says, okay, we're going to hike up this hill. And again, this is the Andes Mountains. So you're way up there. And we start hiking up this hill. And he says, we're going to a cave. And you start to pass by all this Inca construction that's in ruins. And anytime you see Inca construction, you know, if you know, that, okay, the Inca found something much older around here. And that's why they showed up, right? Because it wouldn't make any other sense to go to this area. It's so way out and it's so high up.
Yeah.
This was a hike up the side of a mountain. So what did the Inca find up here? Well, you look up in the distance and you see this massive triangular shaped cave. And you get inside the cave and it's still the most mind-blowing sight I think I've ever seen, because it's halfway up a mountain in a cave. You see the most futuristic megalithic shaping inside this cave. On one side is a massive, what looks like a Chiron portal, with like a, not a 3D, but like a 5D cut door that goes into the mountain.
Wow.
It's a faux door, so it doesn't actually go in, but this was considered a portal. And then on the front of the cave is what looks like, and I can send you pictures if you want to show this in your video or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It looks like a console or an altar. It literally looks futuristic, almost like you could sit in it like a spaceship.
Wow.
And so we're blown away. We're looking around at this. And there was also this Incan elder that was with us who was telling us, hey, man, this is one of the most holy places of the Inca. So even before we got in, he was wanting to spray us down with a special incense. And so we're in there and we're blown away. And then he says, hey, everybody sit down and just let's meditate. And being, you know, what he's told me, I'm really hesitant to want to do, to engage in meditation if I know there's some dark occult powers related to this. So I wasn't meditating. I was just sitting there, but a lot of people were engaging in meditation. This guy started beating a drum and he's chanting, and he was basically saying, just welcome the spirits. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. And so it was peaceful and quiet there for a few minutes. And then all of a sudden, we heard this blood-curdling scream. And this guy in our group, you know, I opened my eyes and he's just flailing his arms and screaming at the top of his lungs like he's dying, scared to death. So we all rush over to help him. And when he settles down, he tells us that he saw a puma come through the portal and enter him.
Wow.
Right? And so to me, that was the craziest experience, because it kind of it showed me a connection between the ancient legends, the megalithic technologies, and the spirit world, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so when we went back there last year, this is several years later, right? Our tour guide, who's one of the best in Peru, and he descends from the Inca, I hadn't been able to tell him of this experience. So he was saying, hey, yeah, let's go in here. And this is one of the most sacred spots of the Inca, blah, blah, blah. He was saying the same stuff. And he goes, we'll even meditate. And I said, well, hold on. I want to tell you guys a story. And so I told him that story. Their eyes were about this big. And I guess the point is, you want to be very careful with that stuff, right?
Yeah.
At these sites, because just based on that story, it appears there are ancient, you know, ancient spirits, whatever you want to call it, connected, and you want to be careful what you're messing with. So that was a crazy experience, and it showed me, man, there is so much more going on than we know.
100%, man, for sure. Yeah. Wow. Do you think it's possible that these giants are still out there somewhere?
You know, I mean, I mentioned L.A. Marzulli. He and others have broke the story. I think it's the Kandahar giant.
Yeah.
If people haven't seen that, Google Kandahar giant. You'll probably see L.A. Marzulli's research on it. I know the Blurry Creatures podcast have talked about it as well. And again, in a nutshell, there were reports during, I think it was Desert Storm in the 90s, of these soldiers who were... I think it was Afghanistan, you know, fighting in the war, and encountered a massive giant in a cave that they had to engage, you know, with their weapons, and they killed it because I guess it apparently killed some of them. And long story short, it was boarded on a massive, I think C-130 or whatever they call that plane, and flown to the U.S. And the reason that supposed story came out is because it was the helicopter pilot who heard the story and then saw it's being loaded onto a crate and into the plane that he flew. And I think he told L.A. Marzulli that story. So that's kind of the most extravagant, crazy modern day account we have of a possible live giant.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I did come upon something pretty crazy in my research about Easter Island. And so I can share that with you real quick.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, man.
I mean, Easter Island is world renowned for the Moai statues, you know, these massive statues that up until just a couple decades ago, we learned had actual bodies. You know, forever they just thought they were the heads. But now we know, if you dig down, their entire bodies buried in the mud. There's so much mystery surrounding this island. There's not just these megalithic statues there, but there are megalithic walls there, just like in Peru. So the same builder class, you know, I believe was in Peru and was on Easter Island. But many of the early explorers to Easter Island in the 1700s reported about these unusually shaped skulls on the back of the island's inhabitants. This is back in the 1700s. The point is, they might have been some kind of hybrid back then in the 1700s that were still alive. And they had these weird bumps on the back of their necks. And there's a bunch of really old wooden carvings that are in some of the world's museums all over that depict these strange features that these explorers found in the 1700s of these strange anomalies on these islanders back then. So that's one thing. And then if you get into like Thor Heyerdahl, he was one of the guys, great explorer in the 60s. He did some of the first extensive archaeological research on Easter Island. So I got his book, and a lot of what I pull from on Easter Island is from him, because I think he's one of the best sources. But he talks about in his research that the Easter Islanders talk about how the island was settled twice. It was settled later by, you know, the Polynesians who came over, and they're the ones that get credit for kind of everything. But the oral traditions speak of a first settlement that was by a race called the Long Ears. And these guys are apparently came from the east, and the Short Ears came later. They were from the west. That would have been the Polynesians. But these Long Ears appear to have been a power in the island at a far earlier age. You know, we're talking a pre-Diluvian age. And the oral traditions state that the later Short Ears were like laborers and were building on top of what they had found. And so it's interesting that these Long Ears are credited to have built these Ahu temple platforms, the megalithic walls, and the foundations that a lot of these Moai stand on. And so, again, when you look at the oldest, biggest Moai statues, because there's different styles. There's smaller ones that look like they were probably created later, but then you've got the massive giant ones. They've got these huge long ears, right? And strange noses, chins, heads. They genetically look different, right? And so, another thing. The first explorer to Easter Island was Jacob Roggeveen in the 1700s. He was a Dutch explorer. So I was reading through their writings, and this is where I pulled some of this crazy stuff. So when they went to Easter Island in the 1700s, they talked about how they observed how the giant Moai statues were served by a priesthood of, they said, very large-looking men who had remarkably white skin, long ears, and red hair, while the rest of the population appeared to be of a mixed descent and did not venerate the statues as the priests did.
Wow.
So to me, right here, I think we've got a snapshot of the ruling class still being alive in the 1700s. And they mentioned they were large and they had red hair and remarkably white skin. Pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing, man.
Other research I found about Easter Island, there was a bunch of missionaries that lived there. One guy's last name was Zumbalm, I believe. And he documented in the 1800s that in former times, the high priests ate children in the name of their god, Makemake, who was one of the occult gods on Easter Island. So we've basically got these cannibalistic, white-skinned, red-haired, large priests. Pretty crazy. If that doesn't get crazy enough. So I found reports of possible living giants, again, back in the 1700s, more so than what I just shared there. So Jacob Roggeveen and his partner, Dalrymple, I think his name was, they wrote about their expeditions to Easter Island. And in their ship logs, or one of their books, and I've got it right here somewhere. And again, these guys weren't jokers. I mean, this Dalrymple was one of the greatest hydrographers of his day, making maps of the ancient world, nautical charts. And so this is who is writing this. So in Dalrymple's book, he documents the ship logs of Roggeveen, 1722, his voyage to Easter Island. And here's what it says in this book. Here's the account below. Thus far, My narratives will gain credit because it contains nothing in common, yet I must declare that all these savages are of a more gigantic size. For the men being twice as tall and thick as the largest of our people, they measured one with another the height of 12 feet, so that we could easily, who will wonder, add it without stooping, have passed between the legs of these sons of Goliath. According to their height, so is their thickness, and are all now with another very well proportioned, so that each could have passed for Hercules. And it goes on to say a little bit more, but my jaw fell to the floor when I read that part, that here in 1722, these are the, again, explorers that went to Easter Island, and this is what they're saying they saw on the islands.
It's incredible. And it's not that long ago, really. Like in the great, it's you know, that's relatively close to us now that these things were reported.
Yeah.
Super, super interesting, man.
Yeah, but that's the kind of those are the kind of nuggets I love finding, you know, when doing research, that it just doesn't seem like your normal book about Easter Island is ever going to tell you that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's why I love history and love documenting these things and just finding out more. So
yeah, it's wild, man. I mean, I don't know how anyone can sit back and with the history books that we've got, with the official narrative, and sort of take that for what it is, because there is so much more going on, as you say, and so much more to this world. It's incredible. It's amazing.
Yeah, and right there in your backyard, I know you live near Stonehenge. And
yes, yeah.
Just the little research I've done on that, because we've got our tour coming up there this summer, is, you know, Stonehenge is originally called the Giant's Dance. That was the first name for it.
Interesting.
And the first ever drawing we have of Stonehenge, going back hundreds of years, is of Merlin the magician at Stonehenge, and what's next to him, this giant, is building Stonehenge.
Wow.
And so this is part of their legends.
Yeah.
And so that's just fascinating. Hugh Newman is another guy who's done some extensive research on that, and that's who I'm doing the tour with. So I can't wait to get to Stonehenge, man, and see this for myself. How many times have you been there?
I've been to Stonehenge quite a few times. So I live pretty close to it now. I never used to live as close, but we used to go on holiday to Cornwall every year, and you used to have to drive past Stonehenge to get there. So we'd always make it our point to stop at Stonehenge. And we remember going up to the rocks. You know, if you ask anyone now, they'll say you can't do that. But we remember actually walking up to the rocks, touching them. When I was a kid, I remember this. But apparently that's never been the case, but which is strange, because I remember doing it. But yeah, Stonehenge is a magical place, man. I went there last year, the last time I went there, and it just blows my mind every time.
Wow. Yeah. Well, according to Hugh, again, who I'm doing this tour with, this, I think it's June 30th through July 6th.
That's my birthday. Yes.
Is it?
Yeah. June 30th. Yeah.
Oh, wow, dude. How, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll see you on your birthday. You know?
Oh, man, that would be amazing. Yes, for sure.
But according to Hugh, we're going to have a private visit inside Stonehenge, which I know, your average tourist can't go walk through it, but we're going to. And I hope that means I might get to touch it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you will, man. I'm sure you will. I had Matt Pike on the show, who I'm pretty sure you're probably going to meet, because I know he works at Stonehenge every day. And he was telling me, you know, some of the lore and legend of Stonehenge. And what I found amazing about Stonehenge is so much of what is underneath Stonehenge is untouched. There's so much there that they haven't really explored yet. So you can just imagine what could be found in the future.
Oh, yeah. I mean, same with like in Bolivia at Pumapunku, which is a site we're going to see this summer as well on our Peru-Bolivia tour. You know, most people don't realize that what you see at Pumapunku now above the surface, the H blocks that are precision cut, it's like maybe 10% at best of what is really under the ground.
Yeah.
And again, that's one of the just That's the way you learn to think critically. We know there's about 90% more underground. Why won't they unearth it?
Yeah, yeah.
But they won't. They don't want to. Why? Why wouldn't you want to unearth some of the greatest ancient structures in the world right here? Why won't the Bolivian government unearth those?
Yeah.
Well, it's probably because they don't want us to see what they're going to pull out of there, right?
Yeah.
Because man, just the little we do see, the little broken blocks are probably some of the most, again, advanced looking ancient evidence of ancient technology I've seen. And I cannot wait to see them this summer.
Wow.
So there's so much to see. I guess the point is our world is far more interesting than we've been led to believe, right? And that's why I love getting out in the field and seeing stuff, because it just makes it really come alive.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, giant bones are still found today, I believe, and when they're put into to be analyzed and stuff like that, is it true that a lot of these bones go missing and are never seen again?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, I do believe giant bones are still found today. The reason we never hear about it is because of something called NAGPRA. This is a law that was passed, especially in the U.S. in the 1990s. And NAGPRA stands for, I think, Native American Graves Repatriation Act. And basically it says that anything found that's super ancient belongs to the Native Americans and must immediately be repatriated and buried. So your average person who doesn't know what we know, you know, usually they, if they find some 9-foot long skeleton, they call up, you know, the authorities or the university who control everything, and it's never heard of or seen of again, right? No.
Yeah.
Not even a news report about it. So I think that's the biggest reason. And that's every country now, especially Western country, Europe. They all have some kind of laws like this. Again, controlling history, controlling the discovery of artifacts, of skeletons, to where it's not allowed to be shared to the public, right? But again, if you look at all these newspaper reports from the late 1800s, early 1900s, it's crazy what you find. Skeletons discovered all over America, documented again in the New York Times, the Scientific American. A lot of the mounds in America, we have the mound building culture, and I know you do too there. You have ancient mounds,
yeah.
But in a lot of these ancient mounds, giant skeletons were discovered with crazy artifacts, shields, swords, artifacts that look Mayan, like straight from South America. And most people are shocked to see photos of these artifacts because they're not shown anywhere else, right? They want us just to think these were hills that some Native Americans built, and most of them, sadly, have all been flattened in the U.S. by the Smithsonian back in the early 1900s, right? So they were the ones who destroyed all of this ancient history. But yeah, right here, I got a running list of a couple of newspaper headlines I'll read to you that, see, where'd they go? Okay, so these are all New York Times headlines back in the day. 1871, New York Times report, 8-foot skeleton with filed teeth found in Virginia cave. 1885, New York Times report, 8-foot skeleton found in underground vault. 1916, New York Times report, 7-foot horned skeletons found in Pennsylvania mound.
Wow.
Crazy, isn't it? Then that's just incredible. That's just 3 I've found.
Yeah. Man.
But, you know, yeah, so as the European colonists, as they made their way to the New World, they obviously found a thriving culture that was settled by the Native Americans. But as they pushed westward, they began to find the remains of this other earlier culture that seemed to predate the Native Americans by thousands of years. And again, the giant earthen mounds constructed with ancient knowledge and mathematics that allowed them to withstand ages of earthquakes and cataclysm. They were found unscathed by the settlers. And so, but these settlers would often dig inside of them and they would find these artifacts, these giants. And some of the biggest mounds that we can still see today are the Cahokia Mounds in Illinois, Serpent Mounds in Ohio, Tennessee. The state of Tennessee has some good mounds. They're called the Pinson Mounds. But yeah, strange teeth, large stature, robust skulls that could slip over the skull of a normal human. And then even, did you ever hear Abraham Lincoln's quote about the giants?
No.
So, you know, our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, he was visiting Niagara Falls one time, and he was writing in his journal about the beauty of Niagara Falls. And he said, the eyes of that species of extinct giants whose bones fill the mounds of America have gazed on Niagara as ours do now.
Wow.
So, you know, he's recounting the beauty of Niagara and how ancient it is.
Yeah.
And again, in his worldview at the time, before it was politically incorrect to talk about this, he blurts out and writes down, the species of extinct giants whose bones fill the mounds of America gazed on Niagara like ours do. Pretty insane, huh?
Super interesting, man. Wow.
Yeah.
Derek, man, this has been absolutely amazing. I it's been such an honor talking to you tonight. I really appreciate it, man. Wow.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. This has been a great discussion, and I could talk all day about this stuff.
Yeah, I could listen to you all day talk about it. It's amazing. I'm looking forward to you coming over to the UK. I'm going to try and catch up with you because that would be amazing to meet you in person. Thank you so much, sir. Can you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah. You can just search for Stargate Voyager on any of the social media channels, YouTube, Instagram are probably my biggest ones. Again, I'm on X, Facebook as well, despite the censorship. And then I've got a blog, StargateVoyager.com, where I kind of have, you know, articles I write and lots of photos. So you can follow that. And that's got a link to my tour page, StargateVoyager.com/tours, where you can find all the tours we're doing this year. So we're going to go to Stonehenge this summer. We're going to Peru and Bolivia in August. We are going to, I'm going to Egypt in May.
Awesome.
We've got a few spots left if people want to join us there. And we got a special discount if you want that. So yeah, just go to StargateVoyager.com/tours. So that's everywhere you can find me. And I'm trying to think, oh, and I've got a podcast as well that I usually post episodes to Spotify and YouTube.
Awesome, man. You are a legend, brother. Your work is amazing. Thank you so much. I hope to get you back on soon again and talk more. Thank you very much, man.
Pleasure is mine. Hey, thanks, man.
Let's get freaky.
Something's in your room. You can't move. You can't speak. It's a horrible, horrible feeling.
You know, you're looking out into the darkness and then you see a figure, but it's darker than the darkness.
I just get this like really creepy feeling, and I see this this like shadowy demon looking figure in the front seat of the car.
She used to come into my room at night and stand right by my bed, and I just was petrified.
I remember I saw something fly by my bedroom window. We heard the bathroom door shut, so then we looked out my bedroom window down the hallway and the bathroom door was wide open.
So we came around the bend and we saw Eyeshine. This thing stood up. I mean, it stood up. And it had high pointed ears, it had a snout, had a long arm, and it grabbed the deer. What?